What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to Indeed, the independent wrestling podcast. I'm Mike Hamley, here as always, talking some independent wrestling with another wonderful guest. And of course, my co-host is always Righteous Reg. How are you doing, Reg?
I am doing wonderful. We started out this podcast very, very funny. I'm very happy to be here. It is the Wednesday podcast extraordinaire of them all. It's Indeed. It's Mike and Reg. We are here talking today with, we always misspeak, actually, I think, when we say an independent wrestler when we're talking about this guy, but he is so deep in independent wrestling all the time, every weekend. It's three or four times. He is the MVP of independent wrestling. That's an easy thing to say. And as Mike and I have said coming into this podcast, we've probably talked about this guy on every single Indeed episode we've had, either directly talking about him or a guest talking about him or something kind of he's brought up in this podcast some way. So very excited today to have Speedball Mike Bailey here. It's double Mike day, Mike.
Hello. Well, thank you so much for having me, Mike and Reg. When you say talk about me every episode, I hope you mean talking shit, and that every time you see something positive about someone, you go, unlike that, that dirtbag Speedball Mike Bailey.
What, we're not here talking positively about you. Never. Every time there's a bad spot, we're like, no. Just like Mike Bailey does it. Somebody does a really soft, terrible kick, we're like, just like Mike Bailey.
Right? Because yeah. That's the theme of this podcast, kind of. We're just airing grievances. Mm-hmm. We're going to do that for the next hour.
But
if you want to, sure. Yeah. it's your hour. Do with it what you'd like to.
No, that's not Speedball.
In times like these where, you know, it's you can't seem to open up your phone without finding somebody complaining. It's quite the opposite from you, actually. You're kind of just head down, go to work, always kind of, you know, just heading to the next thing. But before anything, I got to get something off my chest with you. You claimed a fair amount of TV watch time recently when you're on the road challenging Zack Sabre Jr. What do you watch to fill up 80 hours in a week? Like, what are you watching?
Great question.
Okay, so first off, I just want to say that was categorically a complete fabrication and a lie. I absolutely do not watch
for sure.
80 hours.
You don't
of
have
television.
Time for that.
No, like, when's this man got 80 hours of anything?
I don't watch television. I don't own a television. I mean, I watch a lot of programming on, like, Netflix and Hulu on my laptop. We're watching Abbott Elementary right now, which is fantastic. Highly recommend. Yeah. I watch way more YouTube than I watch any kind of television. Though, you know what I mean? It's streaming era. I like a lot of shows and movies, but it's honestly a lot of YouTube for me.
Yeah. I think my first question, Speedball, is a very easy and simple one. Every weekend on Sunday, I think, how do you do this, my friend? How? you'll fight Brian Keith one night, then the next night you're fighting Josh Alexander, then the next night you're in a lucha six-way, and you're okay to do it the next week. First question is how?
So a big part of the answer is pro wrestling is not that hard.
Oh, okay.
I mean, compared to a lot of other things, like, you just do it. You know, I just do pro wrestling and I just have matches and it's like 20 minutes of very intense effort two, three or four times a week. But compared, like, I have a background in Taekwondo, right? Martial arts is kind of the first thing that I took a really deep dive into physically. And training for Taekwondo tournaments, much, much more difficult than professional wrestling in terms of the training and the physical part. The travel and the mental toll of it all is very difficult, but also the fact that this is my job and that I don't have to work, you know what I mean, someplace that I do not like. I was a janitor for many, many years. I cleaned a university during the night from 10 a.m. to 6 a.m. And I can tell you, pro wrestling is a lot more fun than that.
So it's easy.
So it's not that it's easy, right? It's incredibly difficult, and to do it as a high level takes a lot of effort, but it absolutely doesn't feel like effort.
Gotcha.
Managing your 6 hours and trying to have the time to clean five floors of classrooms, now that's effort. That's difficult. The effort that you put into pro wrestling is all fun.
Absolutely. You know, that part of that fun is, you know, visually evidenced on your face. You got a nice kick in the brow from Masaaki Mochizuki this weekend.
That was an elbow, actually. It was not a kick.
Yes.
Yeah. Pro Wrestling Revolver posted a very nice clip of it by TussleMania. Shout out TussleMania, who takes some of the greatest clips.
Great.
In wild
pro
shot.
Wrestling right now. Yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, you can just see it. You can see the elbow hit my brow, and then you can see the blood just instantly spurt out. It's fantastic.
Ooh,
tough. So you know, you meant you know, a physical recovery. You're saying it's actually not as bad as you're saying. The mental recovery is something you know, and the travel, and you know, the kind of the toll that all that mileage puts on your body. I did want to kind of touch on mental health with you. If that's all right. You know, someone tweeted at you recently and asked who your favorite opponent this year has been. And you quoted them with the answer of depression. Mm-hmm. That tweet got, you know, obviously a fair amount of response from people. And I would imagine your DMs got more than, you know, people would see even through the timeline. How are you doing today, first of all?
Okay, so today I'm tired.
Yeah.
We have only gotten 3 days at home this week, and we have a lot of like basic tasks just piling up to the point where it feels overwhelming, right? And yeah. I'm sure you guys can fully relate to this, but being in the part of your career where you're still like doing a bunch of different things and trying to make them all work, and your focus is split between 12 different tasks that are kind of tangentially related to your main one, and you have a bunch of things that could work out really well, but you can't do anything about those things right now, so you really try and focus on all the other things, and you know, that's kind of what happens in those 3 days I spell home before I go back to traveling, and it's heavy right now. It feels heavy.
Understandable.
Yeah. Understandable. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah, but no, I understand that that's kind of a...
But it's true, though.
A grim answer. Yeah. But, like, that's the truth of the story with depression and mental health issues, is that I have them. I have depression. And it's a battle, and it's something that I'm going to carry with me for my whole life. Mm-hmm. And luckily, at 33 years old, I've kind of made peace with that. And that's a part of me that I reconcile with. And I you know, I deal with it as best I can and move on.
And shout out to Veda. I'm sure she helps a lot with all this. You continuously say we, as you are a unit. You see you two together a lot. And I'm sure that's very great help on your mental health.
It is all of it, honestly. I say we without even thinking about it. I apologize to all you listeners that aren't familiar with People on My Bailey, but Veda Scott, my partner, in life, in marriage, and in tag team wrestling on occasion. We support each other, and honestly, there's so much that I could not do and would not do if it wasn't for Veda's support.
Hell yeah. So, about you bringing up, kind of bringing that up publicly, why were you so candid with it? And, you know, kind of putting that out there with such a blunt answer?
Because it's a funny joke.
That's a bit.
Because I thought it would make for a good tweet, and it did. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I don't have a unique take on mental health and depression that you can't find in a much more researched and educated way on other parts of Twitter. I mean, I'm not that smart. I'm a professional wrestler. However, I can pop out a pretty funny tweet once in a while. And I mean, I think that makes it all the more relatable.
Totally.
And you know what I mean? Some just bummer, hey guys, I'm depressed tweet.
Yeah. Yeah. No, very, very relatable. I think, you know, seeing somebody that maybe, you know, is maybe viewed on more of a pedestal, having that fiber that kind of connects, you know, normal, non-wrestling, non-super athletic folks to, say, someone that, you know, is in an admirable place, or, you know, viewed on a pedestal. That's super helpful with normalizing that, whether joking or not. I did kind of mention looking at you on a pedestal, and I wonder, because I don't really hear you talk about it, but you know, whether you probably like it or not, for lack of a better term, you know, be it from in your in-ring work to teaching outside of it, you know, there are people that, you know, look at you in a you know, certain light, maybe differently than others. And is there any expectation or weight that you carry as a result of that, and how do you manage that, if so?
So I am deeply careful about that as a thing, and I do not want my opinions, or especially as pertains to wrestling, to be viewed as more than that, as more than like good opinions on wrestling. I mean, this is another thing, right? Sort of back to mental health that you'll hear a lot, you know, people say, and it's like, hey, you can come to me anytime you're in need, and if you have anything I can help with, and for me, it's the complete opposite. Please don't. I struggle. I am not perfect. I am deeply flawed as a human being.
I have my own things, dude. I can't take on yours, too, is kind of how I feel sometimes.
Right. You are placed literally on a pedestal when you're wrestling, right? Every eyes are on you. You're in the ring. You're like physically higher than everyone else. And that does put you in some kind of, you know, like elevated stature that I don't agree with it. You know what I mean? I think there's that barrier oftentimes between professional wrestlers and quote unquote the fans, which is, I even hate that word to begin with. Like, I think that it's, you know, I much prefer audience or supporters when it's people that are actively encouraging me, but I think fans is weird. And I think to put anyone on a pedestal because they're good at their job is weird behavior at best. But that being said, point. Like, I have been doing pro wrestling for a very, very long time. I've been, you know what I mean, in terms of doing matches and the mechanics of it and the story writing and the navigating the business, I am excellent at that. I'm more than happy to help anyone who needs help with it, you know, sharing knowledge and telling them things that I wish someone would have told me earlier, because I do have that knowledge. However, I have no training in human psychology or mental health.
That's a great point that you make, too, because I've seen with my own eyes at a couple of West Coast Pro shows of you going around and helping anybody that wants it and needs things just for their match, or just trying to go over things with that. You become like more than just Speedball Mike Bailey, the wrestler. It's like also Speedball Mike. I guess it goes into like the training thing. It kind of comes along with that. How much of that is just, you, did you get that coming up, were there vets that were like around that would impart their knowledge as much as you do, and you wanted to kind of be that person? Or was it like you didn't get that and you want to be that person?
So yes and no. The vets that actually came and helped me for advice were like few and far between. And the ones whose advice I could actually use as was something positive was very rare. There was a lot of, you know, hey, slow down, kid, and you got to sell and put some boots on, which is just not helpful and was not well-intentioned at all.
Put some boots on.
Right. But, you know, things like that. This is pro wrestling, not karate, which people actually told me in locker rooms. But keep in mind, I started wrestling in Quebec in 2005, where the scene was not good. Bad, even, some would say. But when I started wrestling, my brother was performing as well. He was 2 years older than me. He still is 2 years older than me. But he was at the time, too. But he started wrestling 2 years ahead of me. And then I had another group of like-minded 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old friends. And we all kind of wanted to do the same type of wrestling. We all watched beyond what was on TV and readily available, and we watched, you know, early Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate and X Division stuff from TNA, and we wanted to do that, and we were all kind of, without really knowing it, kind of coaching each other. But we would all watch our matches together and give feedback on what worked and what didn't, knowing what we were trying to do. And I think that part is missing from professional wrestling. Yeah. Not to say that I didn't have work with a lot of like veterans that I learned a lot from. XS. I don't know if you guys are familiar with XS, right?
I saw his son recently, actually, in Hamilton.
I had a match with his son, which is completely
so good,
mind blowing. But yeah, you know, Kevin Steen, I learned a ton from, though that was a tiny bit later. And there was a lot of people, Sexy Eddie, who was always very happy and willing to help. Mm-hmm. But mostly having this group of like-minded peers that were all kind of just coaching each other, because they understood the kind of wrestling that I wanted to do, and they understood the direction in which I wanted to take my career. So their advice was a lot more helpful in that way. And like, I try really hard to do that. I try to understand the kind of matches that people want to put on and help them put that on, rather than telling them the kind of matches that I want them to have. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes my advice and feedback usually different, which is something that I've heard. I know there's a lot of guys like, there's quite a few luchadors that ask me to watch their matches. And I think a big part of the reason is in America, they usually get, oh, you did all those flips and stunts and they were very cool. And then people kind of wash their hands of the rest of it. They're right. Like, you're not even going to attempt to make it all make sense. But I'm like, oh, you can do all those stunts, but make them mean just a little more, or make it easier on you by organizing it just a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a bit of a different perspective that I bring.
I like that we ended up getting here so quickly, because this brings me to a segment we've done here in the past. It's called Anonymous Review.
Mm-hmm.
I have a quote here from someone. I'll read it to you. You can let me know. You let me know who you think wrote it. But it's so perfect for everything we just talked about. I think the biggest thing for Speed.
I can't do anything about my body odor, by the way. I just want to say that. I put on deodorant sometimes, but it's the way I smell. I don't know. Maybe my diet. I can't help it.
Wow.
If that factors in, I apologize in advance.
Wow. I can't believe you knew the review right there. No. I think the biggest thing for Speedball is everybody always knows and puts him over as the best wrestler in the world or a super nice guy. One thing I don't think that he gets enough credit for is how much of himself he gives to literally everybody. Not just friends of his, but other wrestlers, other people that he works with on the show. Basically, if you're in a room with the guy and you have a question on how to get better in wrestling, doesn't matter in what regard. If you're a promoter, commentator, ring announcer, what the fuck ever, he's got time for you. He's got advice for you, and he always does it with a smile. In a business full of people that like to bitch and complain about everything, he does it. He doesn't at all, and I don't think that gets enough adulation.
It could be anybody.
It could be anybody. You want to Feel free to take a guess if you'd like.
Okay.
Keep in mind this would have to be somebody that, you know, I'd been able to reach out to for this. So.
Yeah. Can we? Okay. So is it someone in Canada?
Yeah. I'll let you play warm or colder. It's definitely. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're in Canada, although that makes them colder than warmer.
Is it someone in Ontario?
You know it.
Is it someone near the Toronto area?
Relatively around that area.
Is it someone who will have a show that airs in a few hours on YouTube?
In 40 minutes?
Like in 40 minutes.
It is, yeah.
Oh, is it Big Ben Ortman's?
Oh, there it is. Wow. Yeah. No mystery here.
No. No, this is good. I like that we can introduce these so quickly.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome, though. And real.
Yeah, I just thought it was good time to. That. I thought that was a good time to bring that up since, you know, we happened to get there, get to bring that up with you already. With putting together those matches, you know, something that you did talk about is, you know, finding kind of what, you know, a way to make things work for people. And it kind of leads me to you're being creative and open minded about what wrestling can be. And an example here, one of the only matches my wife, who doesn't really care for wrestling at all, can remember that recently is your match versus Yoshihiko.
Yes.
Something and specific. I had to, you know, no, with you coming, I had to just kind of get a little more in depth with her on this. And I was like, what about it? And she's like, the thing that stood out to her was that you, she said the referees, a Perch, shout out Perch, everyone in the
building. Fucking Perch, man.
Perch, absolutely.
Quite a guy. Yeah.
Totally. Yes. Mm-hmm. But like everyone in the building is bought into what is happening in the ring, and they're reacting and treating everything no differently as if you're wrestling another human being, and that's the part that resonated with her. And I find it funny that that's her takeaway from the match, and not like, oh, that's fucking stupid, you wrestled a doll. You know, there's this awful mindset with wrestling that it's only one thing, and it can only be one thing, and it can only be done one way to be taken seriously. I think it's a tragic outlook, and many of your matches obviously prove this to be untrue as recently as like this weekend. You know, you had a cute off with Maki Ito. I'm sorry that she's cuter than you. You look very upset about this.
Yeah.
You know, but
you're doomed.
Like I'd like to get into your philosophy on exploring the creative bounds of wrestling, whether it's like within matches themselves or in the way that it can even be presented, a la Friday Night Speedball or like a Fightertainment spectacle.
Oh, man, there are so many layers to that. Was a very long question.
I'm sorry. Too much nuance.
First of all, the thing is, shout out to Perch, who is absolutely amazing, and every time I get to include him in one of my matches, it just makes the whole thing so much better. I don't even know where to start with this. So my match with Yoshihiko, which is kind of at the crux of this, right?
Yeah.
Where DDT happens, which is definitely the place where I learned the proper balance between pro wrestling and comedy and what makes wrestling funny. And it also strikes me that your wife, I'm sure, did not see Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay at Forbidden Door.
No.
So only got kind of the level one from the match with Yoshihiko and did not even have like access to the level two part of it.
I tried explaining the additional layer of like everyone made the joke of Speedball and Yoshihiko is going to be match of the year. So, you know, it's like but. And once I started to get into that, she just looked at me like I was crazy and kind of walked off.
But there is so much, like, if me wrestling Yoshihiko just happened in a vacuum, right? If it was a street performer wrestling around with a doll, it most likely would not be nearly as entertaining. But at the basis of all this, right? At the basis of pro wrestling is passion and skill always shine through. No matter the medium, right? And I think that if you have that, that's a great base to start. And like, I'm trying to gather the thoughts here and mm-hmm. form an answer in a way that is understandable. But yeah, man, Yoshihiko is never not over with an audience. It is never not entertaining because it is like wrestling with a blow up doll is truly one of the most scary things you can do. Mm-hmm. As a performer, usually in wrestling, there's a format, and you rely on that format. You kind of have, you pretty much know you'll be successful, right? You present your normal wrestling match. It's worked before. It's worked for countless people before you, and you kind of know it's going to work. But if you're wrestling a blow up doll that people might have never seen before, and it falls flat, then that's entirely on you. You have no one to blame. And I think, like in DDT, comedy wrestling or anything that is further away from the wrestling box is taken so much more seriously
mm-hmm.
and requires so much more effort. And I think there's a lot of comedy wrestling that doesn't work simply for the reasons that they don't take it seriously. But I think it's that balance that makes it funny, and it's the understanding of the fact that it's at the base, it's a professional wrestling show. It's about professional wrestling. And you build those expectations for what professional wrestling is and will be and take those away. That's what makes, you know, wrestling a blow-up doll or having a match where you put on a pair of glasses and everyone starts dancing or having a undead patient that scares everyone in the match. That's what makes it so funny, the fact that everyone knows has expectations for professional wrestling. And it's so funny. I think that being your wife's favorite match is a very common experience.
Right.
And I think the worst thing for professional wrestling in terms of drawing in new audiences is homogeneity.
Mm-hmm.
I think if the show is all one thing, then it kind of only pleases one kind of people, right? True. And I mean, this is a much longer discussion, but there is there's a disconnect in pro wrestling between the people that are putting it on and actually knowing the people for who they are performing. And I think one of the biggest ways that manifests is like when storylines on shows are done poorly. And if you're there for the first time, you're seeing this happen and you have no idea why this person is running in, why we should hate this guy, or why they're getting involved in this match, and it's just confusing when there's a way to explain it. And I think, so these are my numbers. And Reg, I know you're a numbers guy. So tell me if these ring true to you, right? Every time I wrestle on an independent wrestling show, there is roughly half the audience who doesn't know who I am.
Yeah.
There is, right? And out of that half who know who I am, there are maybe 30% of those know my name, are familiar with me from like Twitter, having seen me on show before, but they don't know my moves. They don't know what I do. They don't know, like, they don't know, they know of me, but they don't know who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like maybe 20% of the audience knows that my finisher is a shooting star knee drop and that I'm a Taekwondo guy and I'm Speedball Mike Bailey and I'm a respectful martial artist and that is the character that I portray in the ring, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that way too many professional wrestling promotions and companies and wrestlers play way too much to that 20% and ignore the other 80%, mm-hmm. right, of the audience. But I think that there's work to be done in terms of like teaching that 80%, that more like that 50%, what wrestling is, and then you introduce different ways of presenting it so that there's something for everyone.
Right.
You asked me a very long question. My answer feels
yeah. You brought it back around. No, you got it. You worked right? it. You worked okay, it perfectly. Yep. Mike, you talked about you talk a lot about your Taekwondo background, and I've talked to many of wrestler friends after a Speedball Mike Bailey match, and they're all like, it's a Speedball Mike Bailey match. How is it kind of having, knowing that you're going to go into a match and it's going to be I don't want to say real, but real. Like, there's going to be real strikes. There's real kicks. Everything is like an extra added thing. Have you ever been in a match with an opponent and they're like, oh, this isn't what I was expecting? And you just are like, well, this is what time it is, kid?
No. or at least not in many, many, many years.
Not in a while. Yeah.
Yeah. This is something I say often, right? And this is going to, again, it's a long, convoluted answer, but I'll bring it back. Don't you worry.
Take your time.
I think pro wrestling suffers a lot by trying to hide how it's done. And I think if you really wanted to turn people who aren't familiar with professional wrestling into pro wrestling fans, what you would show them is the entire process, right? Not just the match. But two people who come from different countries on an airplane, meet together, don't speak the same language, kind of gesticulate at each other in a room for like 20, 30 minutes, shake hands, walk away from each other, and then meet in the ring and plop out some fully flawless 15-minute fight choreography. And I think seeing that entire process is a lot more interesting than just seeing the show, right? When you watch, you know what I mean? When DVD extras became a thing, to me, that makes a movie like The Matrix much more exciting, seeing the kind of effort that it takes. It's not just, you know, you don't just plop the scene into a machine and hit click CGI and it creates a slow motion 360 camera dodging bullets scene. There's a ton of skill that goes behind building that. And I think the skill that goes behind building professional wrestling matches is just as interesting as the matches themselves. But behind everything, right? Behind every kick I do, there has been some kind of explanation, and I want to make sure that my opponents, being a good wrestler is letting people know what they're in for. I think the kindest people make the best pro wrestlers, and there are no surprises. There are no disagreements. I don't want to surprise people deliberately want them to be surprised by something in the match, because I want the audience to be able to feel that reaction, but that's a very deliberate thing. I think that for the most part, alongside with becoming a good pro wrestler, I have become very good at that negotiation and the building and the directing and the exchange of ideas that goes behind a pro wrestling match.
I love that you mentioned that, because that's one of my favorite things lately about getting to shows a little earlier is, you know, I might be there early enough to see a couple of people putting a match together and seeing that process play out. And then later on, seeing them have the match and like hit all the stuff that was literally just two people like pointing to corners in the middle of a ring and like making hand signals to each other while they're talking, seeing that all come together, become a match. And then like, you know, they're all happy after, like they hit all their spots, you know, everything, like the timing. It's such a cool thing to witness from start to finish. Like I'm so happy you mentioned that. I wish more people could see it.
This is something I realized when recently there's someone filming kind of a documentary thing, but they were showing me footage of me going over my match with someone else. And there's like four different like dances that go into making a match. Well, there's a dance, there's a song. So there's the doing it alone in your head. There's the saying it, there's the doing it together, there's the saying it together that all look wildly different, but most wrestlers like kind of unconsciously just fall into those, right? Yeah. Like I don't know. This is going to be a boring bit for the podcast listeners, but like, I don't know if you've been around a wrestling show before it actually starts, right? You've seen this one.
This is like exactly how it looks.
I'm
so sorry for the audio listeners, but yeah, this is
watch the video.
Yeah, just watch the video. You should be watching the video anyway, it's better.
Mike Bailey mimicking an entire
That was my match with Maki Ito, by the way.
if you still remember it.
Oh my fucking god. Oh my God, y'all.
You said, of course I do, but you've had like four. Like, how do you remember when you've had like four in a row? I just don't understand.
So the same way you remember actual matches, is it's not like one long series of movement, and it's not actually that unique. There is a structure, there is a method, and a lot of what I do kind of stays the same, which makes it a lot easier, but also there's a logic to everything. Matches that don't make sense are a lot more difficult to memorize than matches where everything kind of just flows in a logical way.
Yeah, that's actually true, because I had a question about that, because they talk about one of the greatest wrestlers of all time, also a Canadian superstar, Bret Hart. One of his things was, oh, Bret Hart has five moves of doom. And you essentially have five moves of doom, Mike Bailey, but you make your five moves in doom into match of the years. How do you? I don't really understand, like, because most people think that doing less, like less is more in your situation. Did you make a conscious effort from the beginning to be like, I can do these things really well, and if I just continuously do them well, I'll be successful?
So yes, that's the goal, but that's incredibly simplistic. It takes wrestlers a lifetime, several years, to figure out what it is they're good at and how to be able to use those things in different ways so that it always feels new. It's always the same sequence. It's always the same five moves, but they're all brought about differently. And those five moves all work together. And you have three different versions of five of those moves that all culminate and add. But it, knowing what those are, what those things are that you do as a performer that make you you and are completely unique, that takes, you know, it took me at least 10 years to kind of start to figure it out.
That's a lesson for the wrestlers out there. It's not fast.
Rome was not built
in a long game. This is me on Finish, right? This is my seminar speech on seminars that I have given. Sorry, on finishers that I have given a lot. And if Giordano listens to this, I'm sorry, because you're being thrown under the bus. But I have a friend called The Producer. His nickname is The Producer. So he used the final cut as a finisher. You know, reverse DDT position, drop an elbow. It's called the final cut, right? It was his finisher because it's a funny pun. Is it Producer? Use final cut. Yeah. Get it? Right? It's not a good finisher. No. It's a bad finisher. It's a bad finisher because over the course of the match, he does things that are way cooler than that. And you know what I mean? You should figure out your finisher by trying a bunch of different moves in that finisher position until you land on one that works the best. Like, that goes for independent wrestling, which is completely different than televised wrestling, where you can just beat a guy with any move, and that's your finisher. It's going to be replayed and packaged and talked about, and you know what I mean? It's a completely different animal, but...
The director.
Look, shout out Casanova Productions, Producer JP, Matt Viviani, Superstar Shane Hawk. Also, they did a whole like announced trailer for their new t-shirt design yesterday, like tied it, like they, the whole Grand Theft Auto 6 thing, like they spun it into their own.
Absolutely.
Love seeing that shit.
Very, and I hate to throw him under the bus because he's a great wrestler and a fantastic producer. So I don't want to take that away from him. And I think he's changed his finisher since. I don't even think that's his finisher anymore.
There we go.
Most likely because I said this to him. But
yeah. And if not, then now, definitely, for sure. That was one of my backyard wrestling finishers. I'm like, people are still doing that? This is crazy.
That and the overdrive.
Oh, no, Mike Bailey. If anybody, if you see anybody doing that, tell them to stop. That's the worst move ever. I hate when people do it. It doesn't even look good. It never looks good. I guess Red Velvet did it one time with the Booker T scissors kick added onto it, and it looked all right, but still, even then, I'm like, this is kind of a stretch,
right? So but that's, I mean, part of the whole thing is that it needs to be a trial and error thing,
right?
And you need to try a bunch of, like, when you're starting your wrestling career, what you need to do is try a bunch of different things and kind of see what sticks, and not just kind of decide that this is going to be your thing from now on. That doesn't work. It takes way more time than that.
You mean you can't just go on Twitter and say, what should we call this, like all the wrestlers do? I hate when Twitter, when wrestlers do that. What should we call this? The super kick, like we've been calling it for the last 30 years, dude. You can't change the name because you came on here. I don't understand it, but I digress. Mike Bailey, it's been an amazing year. 2023, you've had some of the best matches of the year. You've had an absolute classic match with Will Ospreay. You've had a classic encounter with Zack Sabre Jr. How is it? Is there a difference between Impact Wrestling Mike Bailey and Independent Wrestling Mike Bailey?
So, yes, in a way. I mean, there's a difference between weekly episodic wrestling that follows stories and independent wrestling. Most independent wrestling, as I said, like given who the audience is, you kind of have to treat every match as happening in a vacuum.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But when Mike Bailey from Impact wrestles Will Ospreay, I can kind of take for granted, not so much, because especially that match, I had a lot of people tell me this was the first Speedball Mike Bailey match I watched and I was blown away. It was mm-hmm. great, which is fantastic. But there's a lot more knowledge that comes with the Impact fan base. They've been seeing me for nearly 2 years now, kind of do my thing, and they're a lot more familiar with who I am. So, like, you know, things like your finisher and what it means changes when they've seen me win the X Division Championship. You know right. what I mean? Or at least I won it at Ultimate X, so didn't win it with that move, but see me defend it with that move so many times, that means it has different meaning within the Impact Wrestling universe now.
Mm-hmm. Just some thank you for all the great matches throughout the year, because there's been, you know, Ospreay is in the running, Kenny Omega, Brian Danielson, all these people, but you consistently are just great. And it seems like I love having this interview because it makes it seems like you're just like, I don't want to say effortless, but like, it's my job. I just go and do it. It makes it feel even better to me that it's like, I'm just here to do my job and I'm really good at it.
Well, to be fair, A lot of wrestlers and a lot of promotions make it very, very easy. I feel also, like especially that match with Will Ospreay is the best example where mm-hmm. the table was set for us. Impact put us in this position and they were like, hey, you guys go and have a Dave Meltzer 5.25 star match.
And, mm-hmm.
Right. And mm-hmm. we did. And it's like not effortlessly, but in that moment, like just that match itself was not that difficult, right?
You just got to show up for something like that, right?
Well, you know, you got to show up and have a career's worth of preparation that go into that match and an opponent like Will Ospreay, who's gone about it the same way and is, you know, objectively the most consistent performer in pro wrestling right now.
Ridiculous. Yeah. I was essentially, you have to show up as Mike Bailey, not just show up as any wrestler in the world. If you Mike Bailey and you show up, you're going to cook like you guys did. Yeah, I guess setting the table easily like that is pretty well. You've accomplished so much, I think, throughout this year and recently after the thing that happened with you not being able to come to the U.S. for so long. Do you have any goals that you, because you don't seem like the wrestler that wants to be like the world champion of the promotion or whatever. Do you have any goals that that you constantly are kind of attacking, or is it just kind of a day by day thing?
It flows and moves. I do have a goal. I want to buy a house. I want to be a homeowner. That's a very big and important goal right now.
Woo, that's a hell of a goal.
Right? In this economy.
Owning a home in this economy? Yeah.
But no, I mean, just trying to make the most out of every opportunity. And I'm conscious mm-hmm. of what I'm doing and the kind of work I'm putting out. And I think that trying to top that is a pretty big task, trying to stay on course and keep going up, up, up. And I did have a huge year and I you know, I've got to figure out how to make 2024 even bigger.
Oh, good luck.
he's coming for you, Hiromu. He's coming.
That's one part of it.
That's the one I'd like to float out there. Is
someone owes you a 1v1. I defeated Hiromu and earned myself a shot at the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship, which I technically got my shot, but it was a three-way match, mm-hmm. and Yo is the one who got himself pinned. So mm-hmm. I remain unpinned, so I think I'm still owed a shot at Hiromu's Junior Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, I'll stand on that one with you. Absolutely.
Thank you. Appreciate the support.
A couple more things I did want to touch on before we get you out of here, because we do want to make sure we're all done in time to watch some crossbody at 7 as well. Mm-hmm. You touched on, discussing kind of finishers in a seminar, training and seminars. You do tons of teaching. A lot of your bookings will come with like a seminar, possibly earlier in the day, or earlier in the weekend, without giving away too much of the secret sauce. And I feel like we might have heard some condensed condensed versions of maybe some things you touch on. Today, what does a speedball seminar generally look like? And if a promoter was watching this right now and they wanted to get you out to their school, how did they go about doing that?
Just ask. I'm on a lot of platforms. Just send me a message, email. So the thing is, I'm quite busy, right? Which makes me quite hard to book. That's the main hurdle. But if we can figure that out, it's usually pretty easy. But the message is always, figure out your strengths, figure out what you're good at, and then figure out how to replicate it, figure out how to use that so it can be consistently applied in every match. And I mean, deliberation and mindfulness are the key. If you show up to a match without a plan, it's not going to go as well as the ideal scenario, which is both you and your opponent or opponents all have ideas of what this entire match could be. And then you just cherry pick all the best possible scenarios and end up with that match as well. I think how to communicate efficiently, if you're not French Canadian, is a super important aspect of professional wrestling, man. Just that communication and being able to explain your ideas well and clearly, I think that covers a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Another thing I did want to kind of get to with you is, we've heard you, at length talk about the pros and cons of having a spouse in the industry. But what I'd like to hear from you is, put Veda over. Let's get it on video. Why the hell has no one hired Veda yet? And why should every company be lining up to hire them?
So because Veda puts more effort and work behind what they do than literally anyone else I know in the world.
So busy.
Right. So I think the main hurdle is that in terms of pro wrestling, jobs for professional wrestling commentators, like with a full contract and everything, there's like 10 of them.
Right.
Right. And a big part of the hurdle is there is a certain voice, right? You don't sound like a commentator. The same way that a lot of people are told, you don't look like a wrestler. Well, we all know what that means very specifically, right? And Veda doesn't sound like Bobby Heenan at all. So that's something that they have to overcome. But, they've worked for 40 different promotions this year alone.
Wow.
And this is just not my own biased opinion, but this is something that's echoed a lot by a lot of pro wrestlers. But Veda does a fantastic job telling the story that you are telling as well.
Yep.
And really, again, because of how long they've been a pro wrestler, really understands what the wrestlers are doing more than a lot of commentators. And talking about how I think a big part of Veda's secret again is being able to watch people do that dance, right? Or just talk about those ideas and know exactly what they mean and what they want to do. And I think Veda watches all the wrestling, knows everyone, and would not dare do commentary on a match of anyone that they don't like know ahead of time. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That makes a ton of sense. It's actually my preferred strategy for booking people to come on the show.
Yeah.
Right? I think it's a smart one.
Yeah, it's what you really notice it when you see a commentator that's not that great, and then you hear Veda and you're like, oh, I see. Like it's to add on to the match, not just be like commentating the match.
So that's another big thing. Like if you're especially like women's wrestlers, female wrestlers will all know this. Sometimes you have a great match and then you watch it back with the commentary and it's you'd like to send it to promoters or use it to advertise yourself. And it's like, I can't use this. The footage is now ruined. That used to happen more 10 years ago or so. But it's something that Veda has personally dealt with a lot. And thankfully, it doesn't happen that much anymore. But knowing the impact of someone, you know, telling your story for you and not getting it right, how that can feel, and, you know, the piece of art that you just worked so hard to create.
Yeah, you're like, that's not the story we're telling at all. What is this guy talking about? It's right? Crazy. We have came a really, really long way. I was watching like old ECW and the chance that they would have for Francine. I'm like, whoo, we have like, we're still a lot of progress needs to be made. But where are we at from 1998 is totally different.
Commentary over independent women's wrestling from like the early 2000s is for the most part God fucking awful.
Yeah, yo, seriously.
I'm not that it was fantastic for like the men on the show either, no. But like, yeah. I'm watching Lucha Underground right now, like season one, and Matt Stryker and Vampiro are on some crazy shit when a woman comes on the screen sometimes. Like, it's I can't.
It's, well, shout out to the
leave us
King,
alone
Jerry
in the
Lawler.
Comments. And that's he started all this.
Yeah, that's like 2015 too, and I'm like, oh god. So,
like, I was just gonna say, Puff, leave us alone in the comments. I think we have a super chat here for Van Twin Blade. Please leave us alone, Puff.
We did Van Twin. Yes, Van Twin Blade. Van Twin Blade. The whiteboard guy at Glory Pro Wrestling, as he's also come to know, matches for Speedball at Glory Pro. Love to see you versus Tootie or with Tootie against Mike Outlaw and Suede versus Ethan Price versus Camaro for the title. Book it, Dan. Yeah, Dan, the dad. Mm-hmm. Book it.
Come on, Dan. Dan and I have talked. I'm confident we'll make it work eventually.
Hey, we love
just
it.
Just a busy thing.
Again, that's a conversation I have with a lot of promoters where, oh yeah, I went back and forth with Defy for like a year until we could finally make it work. And then we make it work like two weeks in a row almost.
Yeah.
Which is usually how these things work.
Literally, actually, like, speaking of, you know, I were mentioning promoters possibly watching the show, Love Wrestling, can vouch, a Speedball Mike to Bailey seminar is worth its weight in gold. But also, yes, that is another promotion where I'm sure it took a lot longer to make that match happen than people realize.
It absolutely did, and I hope I can get back there soon.
Yeah, we'd love to see it. You know, so we did give some flowers out real quick to Veda there. We love giving out flowers here. You've had the good fortune of wrestling for more promotions and against more wrestlers than most people can name. So who are some people and places that, you know, that we should be going out of our way to see, either because they're just completely overlooked or they're on the come up and we're going to know their names eventually anyway?
Oh, man, that is such a hard question because there's so many people and I'm going to miss so many.
Yeah, all right, we can skip it. I do have one specific one recently because I saw it in your vlog and I didn't catch the name. Who did you work at Bodyzoy?
Oh, Aigle Blanc.
Okay, I saw like his whole look and his moves and everything. I was like, I am interested. I need to know more. So
that is the problem, and that is literally what I'm trying to do with the vlog more than anything, and my Twitch channel mostly. But that remains the initial goal. There is so much good pro wrestling around the world. So many good people that deserve a spotlight. And as the pandemic was ending, right, and I was still wrestling exclusively in Canada when shows were just starting, and there was a lot of people that I had trained with at the IWS dojo, and I was gonna be working with them for a lot of shows that like didn't really have distribution at all, and I like promoters tend to not be very receptive to the idea of, hey, I'm gonna film this match and just put it on my YouTube channel because they want to own the footage, even if they're not gonna do anything with it a lot of the times.
It's crazy.
But yeah, but so if I make a vlog that's like, you know, 20% vlog, 80% match highlights, and the match highlights are 80% of the match, then that still, you know, feels a lot better for everyone. So that was kind of the initial mission with the vlog. My second vlog ever was a match I had with Zach Patterson, and it was his first match ever, and I helped train him, you know, just as the pandemic was ending for a long time. And he's out there and doing absolutely fantastic now. I think the third vlog I did was the what was it called? I don't remember the name of the show, but it was a show that I booked at the in the IWS dojo, featuring a lot of students that I wanted to, you know, show their matches and highlight them and hope to give them, you know, that little bit of extra reach. And on my Twitch channel, it's hard because you have to find a delicate balance because people only want to watch, you know, Roman Reigns and CM Punk. That'll get you more viewers. But I want to show, you know, wrestling from Argentina that I can actually support. One of the best things that I ever did on my Twitch channel was we broadcasted a live through Zoom, a show that was happening in Brazil with our friends at EWF. And that helped give them a lot, you know, a little boost in terms of viewership and social media and support. And I think there is so much good wrestling that happens around the world that a majority of the, you know, the people that are into pro wrestling and follow it online aren't even aware of.
Wow. That's incredible. That's really cool. It's amazing. It's great. Before we get out of here, I have one last question. Mike Bailey, my biggest pet peeve with pro wrestling in 2023 is wins and losses. I think we lose out on a bunch of matches that could be great because people are thinking about the wins and losses, or a wrestler doesn't want to, or whatever kind of politics around it. Do you get hung up in wins and losses? You're a TV wrestler. And there's sometimes when they announce a match, they're like, well, Mike can't lose because he's on Impact. Do you get hung up on wins and losses? Because I hate it.
Man, I'm 0-5 in my last five matches right now.
No is the answer.
No, I really don't. But I don't think it affects anyone's enjoyment. I mean, I think
right.
when there are bigger
That's exactly what I'm saying. He's speedballing. He's lost five times. He's still speedball. Wrestlers.
Right. But you have to know when it'll be able to come into play. Like Will Ospreay said in one of his build-up for his recent matches, like how few people had beaten him this year. And I thought, okay, it makes sense for him given the way his career is right now. And he doesn't, you know, take on as many matches as I do. He's a lot more selective about his booking and where he wrestles. So, I mean, it certainly does make sense. I mean, it like... the wins and losses of someone like MJF matter. Like, that's the whole thing.
True.
Right? Yeah. That's the whole appeal is he's the champ and he can't be beaten. So that's one extreme. The other extreme is, you know what I mean, me wrestling for smaller promotions that barely have distribution where it really does not matter at all.
Right. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Well, we've had a wonderful time talking to you here today. And honestly, Speedball, we could probably do this for, I could think of probably good, like 20 other questions just to ask you off of the answers that you've given. Yeah. We'll have to do this again with you at some point, hopefully. But in the meantime, until we get you back here, what do you have coming up that you'd like to plug? Anything to plug? You know, where can people find you at? Let everybody know.
When does this air again?
It's live.
It's airing.
Oh, it's live. Oh, yeah, it's live. Of course it is. I know this. Hello, everyone. Final Resolution this Sunday. You can watch me wrestle Trey Miguel. We have another fantastic match that they just put on YouTube. It was my first X Division title defense. And then I got a bunch of stuff that is coming on. TNA Hard to Kill, right? January 12th, that's the big pay-per-view coming up. The first TNA event. TNA, we're back. We're fucking back.
Yeah,
let's do it. Yeah, January 13th. Is that what I said? Did I say 12? I meant 13.
But there's
Vegas
a whole...
sale.
There's a
Vegas.
Couple of events going on that weekend, right? Because they just announced Ospreay for another event that's going on down there. Yeah, TNA is back, and it's in Vegas, and it's live, and you better be there.
So Hard to Kill is the 13th, and then we have tapings on the next day featuring Will Ospreay.
Nice.
Which is, by the way, I'm very excited that he's going to keep working with TNA. I only know that he'll be appearing at that date, but I hope that relationship keeps going and that we get to have even more matches. But yeah, as far as plugs, go watch some Impact Wrestling. Get ready for the return of TNA Thursdays on Access TV. But the YouTube. Like, there's so many good matches. They put every match that airs on TV on their YouTube. I have a lot of great stuff on there. If you're not familiar with me, go on there and check it out. Check out my match with Trey Miguel that they just released. Watch John Gresham versus Alex Shelley. One of the best matches they've dropped so in recent memory. Watch my hour-long match with Josh Alexander if you have an hour to spend watching pro wrestling. Yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff on there. Watch that, then watch the pay-per-view on January 13th.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you again so much for your time this evening, Speedball. Love to have you back. It was great chatting with you. Reg, before we head out of here, where can everyone find you at?
You know, you can find me every Wednesday here with Mike, indeed the best independent wrestling podcast there is. Later tonight, I'll be on with Denise, the AEW Dynamite post show. Tomorrow, I'm on with Kate for the Ring of Honor post show. And every Saturday, of course, you can catch me with Philip Lindsay, Grab City Podcast, talking the best of everything ever. I don't know. Saturdays with Lindsay. Appreciate y'all.
Hell yeah. And myself, of course, every Wednesday here, 6 o'clock Eastern, talking to Reg and whatever wonderful guests we have with us in the hot seat. The next few weeks we have, next week will be Crystal Moon. Week after that, we have Hayden Backlund. Our last guest of the year, December 27th, that will be Mike Roch from IS, from Interspecies Wrestling. And our first guest of the new year, that is January the 3rd, Effie's coming back. Yes. So, we got a quite the few weeks to end 2023 and start 2024 here on Indeed. Follow me, my ads there. It's the same on everything. Watch me on Twitch. I suck at Fortnite, but it's fun. See you next week. Go to some shows. Love y'all.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.